Our reading this morning will be from the Psalms, the first three Psalms. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on the law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the ways of the righteous, but the ways of the wicked will perish. 2. Why do the nations conspire and the people plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath. I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, "You are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will rule them with an iron scepter. You will dash them to pieces like pottery. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you be destroyed in your way, for his wrath can flare up in a moment. Blessed are all who take refuge in him." Psalm 3. O Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise against me? Many are saying of me, "God will not deliver him." But you are a shield around me, O Lord. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. To the Lord I cry aloud, and he answers me from his holy hill. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. Arise, O Lord, deliver me, O my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. Selah. Last week, David read a portion of, read the entire chapter of 2 Kings 17, you will recall. I was struck quite strongly by one of the passages in there, which I'm going to reread. I didn't know at the time it was going to be the center of what I was going to talk about this week. It is verse 15 of chapter 17 of 2 Kings. They rejected his decrees and the covenant he had made with their fathers and the warnings he had given them. They followed worthless idols and themselves became worthless. They imitated the nations around them, although the Lord had ordered them, "Do not do as they do." And they did the things the Lord had forbidden them to do. And as I was listening to this being read last week, I was thinking of the world we have outside today, the influence that it has on everyone, from the American Idol to the American dollar that has become an idol for so many people. The part that had struck me, of course, was they followed worthless idols and themselves became worthless. And God made a prediction of this through Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verses 16 to 18, which I will read. The Lord said to Moses, You are going to rest with your fathers, and these people will soon prostitute themselves to the foreign gods of the land they are entering. They will forsake me and break the covenant I made with them. On that day, I will become angry with them and foresee them. I will hide my face from them, and they will be destroyed. Many disasters and difficulties will come upon them, and on that day they will ask, "Have not these disasters come upon us because the God is not with us?" And I will certainly hide my face on that day because of all their wickedness in turning to other gods. God had previously made a number of statements in the blessings and the curses, which we have read previously. There are a number of them, and I'm not going to read all of them. I'm going to read some of them. It is in Deuteronomy 28, and I will be reading verses 20, 25a, 31, 36, 38, 45, 58, and 59, and 64. Okay, I'll go over it again. For you to read, you want to read 15 through 68. It's a long chapter, but I'm reading here verses 20, 25a, 31, 36, 38, 45, 58 and 59, and 64. Starting with verse 20, if I can find it. The Lord will send on you curses, confusion, and rebuke in everything you put your hand to until you are destroyed and come to sudden ruin because of the evil you have done in forsaking him. 25a, the Lord will cause you to be defeated before your enemies. 31, your ox will be slaughtered before your eyes, but you will not eat none of it. You will eat none of it. Your donkey will be forcibly taken from you and will not be returned. Your sheep will be given to your enemy, and no one will rescue them. 36, The Lord will drive you and the king you set over you to a nation unknown to you or to your fathers. There you will worship other gods, gods of wood and stone. 45. All these curses will come upon you. They will pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed because you did not obey the Lord your God and observe the commands and decrees he gave you. 58. If you do not carefully follow all the words of this law which are written in this book, and do not revere this glorious and awesome name, the Lord your God, the Lord will send fearful plagues on you and your descendants, harsh and prolonged disasters, and severe and lingering illnesses. 64. Then the Lord will scatter you among all nations, from one end of the earth to the other. There you will worship other gods, gods of wood and stone, which neither you nor your father have known. Idols. And this was towards the end of the book of Deuteronomy. And just two books later, the people, the next generation, essentially, the generation after Joshua died, began running after worthless gods. And in, as we had read, as David had read last week, in 2 Kings, just four books later, it was being spoken of as already in the past. Now, I want the blessings and the curses were ordered by Moses to be done in the land after the land was settled, and Joshua did in fact organize it, and six tribes were set on Mount Gerizim, and six tribes were set on Mount Ebal, and the people were between. And on one side, they heard this great chorus of people repeating the great blessings that God would send upon them if they worshiped Him and Him alone. And on the other side, the great chorus of people saying what would happen if they did not worship the Lord and if they ran after worthless gods and worthless idols. So it was not a minor thing that happened. It was one of the big gatherings that occurred, and the generation that began running from the Lord after Joshua died was probably there to hear this great event. They were probably there as kids or younger people, but they saw it firsthand. They knew what it was. Now, the first thing we want to look at is the word worthless itself. Worthless idols and became worthless. Worthless does not mean of less worth. Well, if it were up to me, I would have made the word worth none or worth nil, because the definition is having no value, virtue, or excellence. And of course, an idol is an image of a divinity as an object of worship. And the second commandment was very specific. No images. Very specific about that. We gradually set them up as we go along, moving from the Lord back and forth. The American dream has to do with getting ahead and can be oftentimes confused with just worshiping riches or worshiping fame or other idols that we set up. Now, who or what is worthy or non-worthy? When I looked it up in my concordance, I found that worthy was almost always used along with the word not. For example, when Jacob was about to meet his brother Esau for the first time since he had skipped out, he was praying to God, you know, save me from my brother. And he did say, I am not worthy of the least of all your mercies. Not worthy. He was very specific about that. In the sectarian religion that I was associated with at one time, there was a time during the service when we would all beat our breast and say, Lord, I am not worthy, several times. Jesus called John the Baptist in Matthew 11, verse 11, the greatest among those who were born of women. But John the Baptist himself said, when speaking of Jesus, I am not worthy to even carry his sandals. As he was close to Jesus, he saw himself to be unworthy. There is the story in the Bible of the centurion who had been a big supporter of the Jews And he sent the elders of the Jews to ask Jesus to cure his servant. And when Jesus said, yeah, I'll come, he sent other people to come and say, Lord, I'm not worthy that you should even come to me. Notice these were all people that are well known. In the prodigal son, you will recall that when he returned to his father, he said, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. In comparing the physical world to the spiritual world, Paul in Acts 8:18 tells us that the suffering of the present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory which shall be revealed in us. And Paul himself, with a life dedicated to Jesus, promoting him, constantly said, I am not worthy to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. It appears that as one draws closer and closer to the Lord, that he more and more sees the great difference in worth between himself and the Lord. And each one of these, as they were drawing closer in prayer or closer to a constant awareness or presence of the Lord, they all saw themselves as simply not of insufficient worth, not of too little worth, but of no worth, not worthy. Well, which of us, or any people, has some worth to approach to God? Well, Romans, quoting Psalm 14, Romans 3, verse 10 says, there is none righteous. No, not one. And Jeremiah in 17, verse 9, says that the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? And yet, we are called to walk worthy of our calling. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. Who is worthy? Revelations 4:10 says that God is worthy. And the Lamb that was slain is worthy. In chapter 5 as well. Our pastor used to tell us that the leader, or a leader, is one who knows the way. That is the one who is worthy to lead. What happens if you follow one who does not know the way? Jesus had the answer to that in Matthew 15:14. He said, if the blind lead the blind, both fall into the ditch. And if you do follow a leader, as so many in the world today do, a leader or an idea that advocates violence or coercion or revenge, and no matter how bad the thing is that you are fighting, you become a part of it. When you follow one that advocates love, forgiveness, peace, justice, mercy, the opposition cannot win. You know the story of the martyrs in the Colosseum when they were being fed to the animals. They would stand there and they would say, I am a Christian, I have done no wrong. And the people, the bloodthirsty people in the stands, when they would see them die, would say, I believe. Even as they died a terrible death, they were converting others. They could not lose when they belonged to Jesus. You've seen what has happened with the missionaries in Africa. approximately 1900 or thereabouts, there were about 4% of the people in Africa were Christian. In about 100 years later, the percentages were in the 80s and 90s. Africa is almost a completely Christian continent because of missionaries, men who gave up everything for the Lord, who did not go after worthless idols. What do we, the unworthy, do to attain to this? Well, Jesus had the answer to that too. In John 17:21, he says, "That they may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me." That you sent me. And he had previously stated this to his disciples in John 14:6, which reference I always get in whenever I speak to the church. And he said, "I am the way. I am the way. No one comes to the Father except through me." He was very specific. What can we do? We have found that we are unworthy. There is not one righteous amongst us, not one. The soul is desperately wicked. How do you start from there? And as you get closer to God, you become more and more aware of that. You must go to Jesus. I must go to Jesus. We must go to Jesus. He specifically calls on us to enter only by this narrow gate. Though the way which leads to life is difficult and is not found by all. That's John 7:14. What is the way to eternal life with God? Is it what we see today in the world? Is it violence, coercion, and revenge, as is taught by a large portion of the leaders in other parts of the world? Those things reduce or sever life. You read about it in the paper virtually every day. Or is it love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, and you can finish all of those. These are the things that enlarge, protect, and transform life. That was God's aim, that life should never end. Because you're here today, you've already chosen Jesus. Jesus in you, and you in Jesus. So when we look at the world situation, and we see a warlike or a war-advocating religion consolidating a portion of the Middle East, an ancestor-worshipping and self-worshipping belief in the Far East, a secularism, almost a demonic secularism, that is attempting to convert the entire Western world, not just our section of the country, but the entire Western world. When we see all these things happening, then we can lift up our eyes to our King of Kings and realize that this impossible situation is a battle that belongs to the Lord and can only be handled by Him. We cannot lose heart if the battle goes against us, for our King promised us, as Beverly mentioned in her message this morning, that in this world we will have tribulation, but we are not to let that affect us. He has already overcome this world. He has already said this. And you must remember too that, as in 2 Corinthians 12:10, It is when we are weak that we are strong. What is it that we are when we're strong? When we're strong, we lash out against what we disapprove of or what we react against without really knowing the effects of what will happen to us or what our lashing out will do to those things that may be a lesson within our life for us to learn. We don't realize it. When we are strong, we let that strength go everywhere. It is only when we are weak that we can allow the Lord to be strong in us and avoid thrashing about, just as Paul said, flailing our arms rather than strongly letting the Lord rule in our lives. In my lifetime, we've been saved from many things. In World War II, we were saved from the Axis powers. After that, in the Cold War, we were saved from the Soviet Union's threats and from nuclear attack. We've been saved from a great number of terrorist attacks in the recent past. And for that, I'm very thankful. We're all thankful. But the greatest of salvations of all of these was when Jesus came into my life and saved me from the greatest enemy of them all. Me. As we look at worthless idols throughout the world, making their followers as worthless as they, let's remember that we were also born into that. And we were saved from it by no work of our own. Let us have no enemies. And let us pray for those who consider us their enemies. And let us remember, in season and out, to tell of the hope that is within us, which is the love and mercy and justice of our God and King. And to conclude, I'm going to read from, again, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 11 through 16. And it's titled in here, The Offer of Life or Death. Now what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven, so that you have to ask, who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us that we may obey it? Nor is it beyond the sea, so that you have to ask, who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so that you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. Thank you.